This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. Free speech is under assault around the world and in the United States, but how should free speech be defended, especially when the rallying cry of fake news is seemingly everywhere, including the White House? Fleming Rose, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, offers his thoughts.
How do you react when you see the now president of the United States openly sort of denigrating media outlets and discussing his personal treatment by members of the media?
Yeah, I think in general, President Trump expresses an intolerance towards not only the media, but towards people and ideas that he don't like, and people that in any way challenges him. And I think that is an example of intolerance that does disservice to the office of the President of the United States. That's a general observation, that I don't think he's a very tolerant person. It's difficult for him to handle criticism. When it comes specifically to the media, I think he, by calling the media the opposition party and dishonest people and disgusting people, he is contributing to the undermining of a very important institution in a democracy, like the courts, like Congress, like the presidency. Those institutions, they are based on trust, and they cannot work if there is no trust in them. Having said that, Trump, of course, is not the only and first driver of this undermining of trust in the media. The media has contributed to this process itself, and I think even though, we have got rid of gatekeepers, and that's a good thing, at the same time, new media today publishes things that wouldn't have been published, in earlier times. Sex tapes, medical records, revenge porn, and all these kind of things that questions the media's ability to determine what is newsworthy. And the First Amendment protection of the press was based on the notion that the media was able to make a qualified and informed judgment about what is newsworthy. And if you take the Gawker case, that is an example of how the situation is changing. Even though, I think the plaintiff himself, I think Hulk said that it was true. What was said and done in this case was documented, and there was no lies. But nevertheless, Gawker went into bankruptcy because of a $140 million lawsuit. Because courts don't trust the media anymore to make this judgment about what is newsworthy in and by itself. And President Trump plays into that equation by further undermining established media like the New York Times, like CNN, and so on and so forth. I think that's a problem, and it's not good.
Donald Trump, among others, have thrived on, in some ways, being treated or mistreated by media outlets, or to be made the butt of jokes, and have used that as a weapon to make media appear less credible to the people who are already bought into Team Trump or people who still call themselves conservatives in America today. And for a large share of that audience, they've essentially tuned out what are, broadly speaking, fairly credible news sources. What is the cost? What are the costs and benefits of that?
As I said, I mean, the benefits in general are that the media has been democratized. There's an open field. There are no gatekeepers anymore. You and I can communicate to 6 billion people with a smartphone without asking anyone. That's a huge achievement. The downside to all this is it has not only to do with trust or distrust in the media, but I think it's a general cultural thing that has to do with the fact that we cannot agree anymore about what is fact and what is opinion. Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the late senator from New York, once said that everyone is entitled to his own opinion, but nobody is entitled to his own facts. That's not true anymore. Trump and people in the Trump administration insist now that there are alternative facts. And that is really an undermining of what Jonathan Rauch called the liberal science model, that democracy, capitalism, and science is based on this free inquiry, that no one has a final say and no one has a personal authority to determine what is the truth. It's going on in a back and forth checking, coming forward with better ideas, better hypotheses, and anyone can check them. And in that process, you establish what is a fact and what is truth and what is knowledge.
And on the other side of that aisle, I'd chime in with a line that Mitch McConnell likes to use, which is the answer to speech you don't like is more speech.
Exactly. And that's the whole that's the key argument by John Stuart Mill, that the answer to bad speech is more speech, not less speech, and falsity will be defeated through this open-ended process, and the truth will prevail. But what happens when you cannot agree anymore about what is a fact? In spite of documentation, in spite of statistics, and I think Trump is really doing a disservice to democracy by undermining what I will call the liberal science model that has served liberal democracies so well. I think that is a huge challenge. It's not only Trump, of course. It's also, you know, the postmodern approach that there is no such thing as the truth, that your values can be as good as mine, that you can have different perspectives, and depending on who you are, you may have a more right to say what you do, and so on and so forth. There are so many things in the culture that over the past decades have undermined this, but I think Trump, by not accepting facts, is really hitting at one of the key foundations of Enlightenment values.
There are people who sort of trade in outrage and have made quite a good career of it, of being able to attract a crowd that is opposed to them, be it on college campuses or in public speeches. And I feel like the American left, for lack of a better term, are groups of people who in some ways have played into that and have helped enhance the reputations of people and made those people celebrities by expressing outrage and ultimately empowering more extreme views than otherwise would be prevalent in conversations that we have in public.
But I think it goes both ways. But we have a topical example right now with Milo Yiannopoulos, I think is his last name. I was at UCLA when he was to speak at Berkeley, and he never got the opportunity to speak because there was a fire and clashes and so on and so forth. And I think the irony of this situation is that the people who are using violence or damaging property are the same people who are arguing for safe spaces and attacking microaggressions, and they want trigger warnings. They want protection, and at the same time, they use violence and to shut down points of views that they don't like.
How do we get from here to the kind of world where that you and I would like to live in, where we do our best to ignore opinions that we find extremely distasteful and otherwise encourage a tolerance for opinions?
It may sound counterintuitive, but I think the key here is that we teach kids or graduate students or young people to being exposed to points of view that they hate or that they actively dislike, and be able to manage disagreements without using threats, violence, or shutting people down. And that is, in fact, the key of tolerance. That's the key notion of what tolerance implies, that you do not ban, you do not criminalize, and you do not use violence, threats, and intimidation to shut down people whose opinions you hate. So we need to reinvent the concept of tolerance and be aware of the mechanisms of social media that tend to reinforce your own opinions. The things that you like and share on Twitter and Facebook are usually expressing points of views that are more like your own, that we should be more consciously sharing and liking things that are contrary to our own point of view. That's the way that you cultivate tolerance. Compared to freedom is a thing that we have to learn. I think most people, they have in it drive for freedom. They want to do what they without other people interfering. But tolerance is something that is really not in it to human beings. You don't want to be exposed to things that you don't like. You don't want to listen to things that provoke you. Shut them out. I don't want to socialize with these people, and so on and so forth. So tolerance is something that we need to teach children in school and in society in general. And unfortunately, the concept of tolerance has been turned on its head. So basically now it means you're tolerant if you don't say offensive things. You are tolerant if you keep silent when people say something that you don't like. And it's exactly the opposite of what tolerance in fact means. It doesn't mean that you should not criticize. It means that you just don't ban and you don't use violence, threats, and intimidation. But it means that you speak out and you manage your disagreements without criminalizing or using violence. And we have lost that understanding of tolerance in our culture.
In the political context, I feel like there is a similar vein of thought of trying to shut down speech with laws that say, well, unless you're willing to jump through a whole bunch of hoops to register your committee, to pay these legal fees that are required for you to comply with this Byzantine system of compliance for the ability to engage in political speech, there is a huge movement on the American left to do exactly that, And Bernie Sanders, most recently, was essentially the leader of that movement. But I can foresee a time when Donald Trump will ally himself largely with Democrats to put that kind of thing into law.
Exactly. And I think that's going to be the test also of the conservative movement now. I mean, how far are they willing to support Trump if he starts walking down that road? So far, it's mostly on the left that people have demanded hate speech laws or other kinds of laws limiting speech or association. But what is the right going to say if Trump goes down that road? And you may remember Stanley Fisher's famous comment that there is no such thing as free speech. And he said that's a good thing. I don't think so. But his point was that people usually are only willing to defend free speech as long as it agrees with your own point of view. But I think in general, in our time, and it's the same in Europe, there is a too strong belief in what laws can do. I don't think that that the law is the best way to regulate a lot of things. In Europe right now, there is this trend that, for instance, fake news. Many very influential European politicians, they want to criminalize fake news as if it was hate speech. Yes, fake news is a problem. I agree, and we have to fight it. But I don't think that you fight it through criminalization. And because if you do that, then you end with some kind of ministry of truth. It's government-sanctioned speech, and who's to define? Is the government really in a position where they can decide what is true and what is false? I don't think so. They thought so in the Soviet Union, and it didn't work out well.
Fleming Rose is the 2016 recipient of the Milton Friedman Prize for Advancing Liberty, and he is a Cato Institute Senior Fellow. Subscribe to and rate this podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.